This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
And Representative Greg Hughes on the right.
And I'm Natalie Gochner in the middle. And this is Both Sides of the Aisle, a weekly debate over politics, policy, and current issues facing the state of Utah. This week, we'll cover the John Swallow resignation, the governor's budget release, and eliminating the use of the filibuster in the U.S. Senate. First, this news. I'm Natalie Gochner, and you're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, a lively and informative conversation about politics in Utah. I'm joined on the left by Senator Jim DeBacchus. Welcome, Jim.
Hello.
And on the right by State Representative Greg Hughes.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And representing the center, well, that's me, Natalie Gochner. Today, we're going to discuss the governor's upcoming budget release, eliminating the use of the filibuster in the Senate. Maybe a few Thanksgiving tidbits. But first, John Swallow announces his resignation. He'll leave office on December 3rd. The Democratic Party's calling foul. They want, to wipe out this election and have a new one. Greg, tell us what you think.
Natalie, I'm glad you gave me the first shot because we've heard from Jim so much in the media lately about this this pending
he
lawsuit.
He has been active.
Going in front of a judge, asking him to nullify the results of this election because of its illegal process. Here's the issue. Let's talk practically. If everything that Jim wanted were to somehow happen, if there were campaign violations that would have to go through a court process and you came up with a verdict, it would be a number of months from now. You may find yourself in this very special election that my good friend Jim is calling for right around filing time, right around the time that people are going to be filing for this position anyway, not to mention the cost of a special election. I think I understand Jim's point, and it's a plea for relevancy, and I appreciate that from the minority party of this state. However, practically speaking, it is unnecessary. I think this resignation solves the issue and should make Jim very pleased about the concerns he's been raising over the months. But to try and cancel out this election and have a special election, I think it's more saber-rattling than merit.
I've been listening to the discussion, listening a lot to Jim talk about it, and I just kept thinking that it's not the Democratic Party or the Republican Party that gets to decide this. This is going to be a legal issue. Jim, is that not right? Like, we don't have a choice how this occurs.
It happens all the time. Just in the Ogden City elections, somebody didn't fill out their forms or something bad goes wrong. They're thrown off and the election is invalidated. What happened is simple. He cheated. Read this 140-page report. It will turn your hair stuffing color in honor of Thanksgiving. He cheated. It's astonishing just in this little sliver of civil stuff what he did. All the Democratic Party is saying is the people that put him in office are that small number of Republican delegates, those political extremists, and now, because they put him there, he cheated, and now how do we get the new one? We go back to those same small cadre of people, and they pick the new attorney general. We reward them
Correct.
With that choice. It's not only morally reprehensible, it also is wrong legally, and where we were prepared to bring that to a judge.
I'm listening to this. I'm thinking whether he's right or wrong. It'll come down to a legal question. Greg, does he have the law on his side, or will the Republican delegates be able to turn in these names and the governor choose?
Just yesterday, on Wednesday, our new lieutenant governor issued a statement on this issue, and he lays out the legal argument that there is not a mechanism to have a special election, even if we would like one, as the statute reads. With the absence of that mechanism and with the need for a judge and for a court, for the process to go through the way it would need to, you are now running into the time where an election is already planned. So practically speaking, I think that Jim's concerns are going to be satisfied because you have an attorney general that's now resigned. You're going to have an election in the next filing period or the next election cycle, which filing starts in March. March is coming up soon. So I think that what Jim would like to see is going to happen.
All will be well with the world.
And it all will be well. All will be
well. That's exactly the problem. Swallow? Who's that? We're Republicans. We never heard of the guy. We don't know anything. No, that stop everything. But here's what I'm doing. Democrats, Utah Democrats, above all, were practical. And I saw a proposal. I talked to Senator Valentine on Wednesday, had a chat with him. He has a proposal that the Democratic Party is going to embrace fully, completely, and absolutely. The Valentine proposal is simple. It is that the person who is selected for the next year to be the Attorney General not run, that we get a statesperson there. We get somebody that everybody in the state can say we admire, we respect, we want you to go in and clean this place up, and we don't want somebody spending the next year running around getting money for their campaign.
Yeah. Let's let Greg respond to that point. That sounds like a pretty good idea to me, Greg.
My only disappointment is that was my little jewel I was going to throw out later in
the
show.
Oh, he always says that I come up with a good idea.
I love that idea, and the reason I appreciate that idea, although having Jim be the one that introduces it's the worst part of that idea, is that I do think there needs to be a politicization of the AG's
Sounds
office,
good.
Whatever. We need to take the politics out for a season.
Yeah.
And I think the dust needs to settle. And I would love to see somebody who isn't, as Jim just described, chosen and then looking to raise funds within months of that appointment. I could support that.
Who are some of the good names? Both sides of the aisle. Who are people that would honor this state, serve the state honorably in our top law enforcement role?
The person I would love to see do this is Senator – I haven't spoken to him personally, but Lyle Hilliard. Mm. Senator Lyle Hilliard, I think, is coming – he is the longest-serving state senator we have in the state. His institutional memory is second to none. He has a keen legal mind, is well-respected in executive branch of government as well as legislative branch in terms of his legal prowess. I also believe because he is the Senate Appropriations Chair and understands the budget, there are some issues about the budget of the Attorney General's office and the amount of attorney generals that are leaving to work as county attorneys or in other jurisdictions that needs to be looked at that hasn't been able to be
looked. So you get a budget guru in there.
Yes, because look, it has suffered. That office has suffered from the politics.
Would he be content to resign from the Senate, take something like this, and only do it
for a
year?
The Senate would fall apart without Lyle.
Yeah. That would be a question the Senate would have.
It's maybe a House guy trying to wreck the Senate. I would love Lyle Hilliard as an interim attorney general. What a great man, greatly respected, honorable. But what about Marlon Jensen from Huntsville?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's an attorney who everybody could say is a man of complete integrity and honesty. I think Marlon might be getting a little bored there farming. What about Judge Uno?
Mm-hmm. Good, great name.
What about General Tarbett? Can we have General Tarbett, who ran the National Guard, who's in that office
right now?
He's the interim now.
I think he's tainted just by having. But no, I mean it. I think he's been in there. And we don't know what mess is in there. I think anybody that even remotely involved with the Attorney General's office is not the kind of person of stature that we need. If he wants to go run and get it all
out. These are all great names. What about this notion, and we only have a minute left, but of not making it an elected position? I mean, I've worked in the governor's office. I've seen where the governor has one legal counsel that's telling him one thing, and then you have the AG representing the state on a different side of an issue. It ends up being conflict between the executive branch, and sometimes it seems like the attorney general should serve as the attorney for the governor.
I could subscribe to that. I would love to see that
takes
not as
politics
elected.
Out of it.
Well, I've seen other states that even have the office of being a judge being an elected office, and seeing people contribute to judicial races, which always seemed counterintuitive to me. The need for a statewide race to raise the kind of funds necessary, I think, does put our top law enforcement officer in. It's just
odd.
Yeah, I could see that not as an elected
trained
office.
Position.
If you get somebody of sleazy morals to begin with, it becomes. We've had a lot of great attorney generals. I think it's a terrifically bad idea to ensconce more power in that governor's office. It's a terrible idea.
What if that governor was a Democrat?
I'd be for it.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. In the next segment, we'll talk about the governor's upcoming budget release. Stay tuned. I'm Natalie Gochner, representing the Political Center. I'm joined on the left by Jim DeBacchus and on the right by Greg Hughes. Greg, in the last segment, I just want to wrap up this swallow conversation. House Investigative Committee, what do you recommend be the next steps there?
Well, it's an important question. It's one that leadership in the House have come together and discussed. If you look at the bill that was passed in the special session that put this committee together, there's two outcomes that were expected that are, frankly, statute. One is that all the information as collected or brought to light be provided to the House members without any conclusion of what it means, but just verified information. Because if you remember back in June of this year, there were a lot of allegations. The purpose of that committee was to get to the heart of it and see what they could find. But the second part, and this is the most important part now, considering that we've seen the resignation of the Attorney General, is a suggestion or a report that would recommend legislative changes, given whatever information is gathered, whatever evidence has been revealed. What laws do we have regarding campaigns and elections?
Interesting. And that's right in the statute.
And it's in the statute.
Yeah, that's
and
great
so
to hear.
When you hear, and this was the question we asked ourselves, do you stand down? Knowing that there are still reports pending that this committee needs to provide, or do you wind down? And we have determined that there needs to be a winding down. We need this at some point, absent a resignation, was going to go well into the spring, is what the prediction was. This report, and the most important part of the report are the statutory changes, could be provided before the session begins. And I think that is important for two reasons. One, we have to show that the value of looking into these issues, that there is something productive that comes from this. And those recommendations, I think, are going to be very, very valuable. The second is that the narrative created in the press conference for the resignation suggested possibly that the only purpose of this investigative committee was to run someone out of office. I think if the House Investigative Committee were to just stand down, go away, disappear tomorrow— Some could argue, well, they got what they wanted.
Yeah, mission
They're
accomplished.
Done.
Mission
so
accomplished.
If you read the statute, if you read the bill we passed, there is some important work left to be done, but can certainly be now. There can be a wind down and a conclusion. And those reports, we're anxious to see them.
Jim, are you satisfied?
No.
I didn't expect you to be.
That was so reasonable, Jim. I can't believe you disagreed.
A wind down, you know, fulfill the statute.
You know, the minute, swallow. Left immediately, there were those in the legislature that were saying, it's over. That was about impeachment. Send that prosecutor back east. This is finished. We want nothing more. There's nothing to be said. Burn the files. Erase the tapes. Make sure everybody's home phones. You know what I think ought to happen? They got a tiger by the tail, a lot more than they expected. This is a real live Eastern prosecutor who's put two governors behind bars, who's no hold barred, no slapping on the back deal, kind of don't you worry about that kind of thing. And our legislature, their Giordano's not used to that. And so what you hear him saying is, limit the scope to the impeachment. Remember, that's what you're doing. And we got to wind this down, wind down. That's what we got to do. We really don't want to know anything else. We're on that narrow
scope. Did you hear me say that, Natalie? That doesn't sound like me.
No, you're not saying that, Greg. But I am saying we ought to, instead of winding this down, we ought to say, you take the rest of that money and you run this investigation absolutely everywhere it needs to go. And then you report back on what ought not to be policies that are accepted. But we're never going to find that in the legislature because they're scurrying around, some of them, like little cockroaches.
All right, guys, enough on swallow. But I will say from the Political Center, this has been a real sad chapter in our state's history. And I'm glad that it looks like it's coming to an end. And I hope in the winding down that they find some of the very things you're interested in, Jim. Next topic.
You're not a cockroach, Hughes.
Next
I just
topic.
Want to make that clear.
Well, thank you. That might be the nicest thing you've ever said. I'm not a cockroach.
I don't know that it's been publicly announced, but
I'm
going to
put that
in
a campaign brochure.
I hear that the governor will be releasing his budget December 4th. This is a $14 billion budget. It's the chief executive officer of our state saying, hey, I'm the only one elected by all the people, and these are my priorities, and I think this is what we should fund. Jim, what are you looking for in that budget?
DOA.
That's what the legislature always does with the governor's budget.
The governor says education, my big priority. And look at it's just been leaked some things. Look at what happens. See if that Prosperity 2020, the chamber's great vision of where we're going, see if it equals the amount that we're going to need to get there by 2020. My guess is there probably won't be a dime to that because the governor has a weird budgeting plan. It is, you know what, let's see where the revenues come and then we'll decide everything by that. That's not vision. That's not leadership.
Just to set the tone here, I believe he has, what is it, about $206 million of new money? And last year it was about $280 million. I'm looking at you, Greg, to see if you're kind of in the ballpark. I know there's some leftover surplus.
And you're right.
But the bottom line is the economy has slowed more than we had hoped, and he doesn't have as much money as it would have been.
And
nice
we have
to
be careful when we say new money. Mm-hmm. When you look at just the inherent growth, student enrollment growth, just some of the maintenance issues to be exactly where we were last year, mm-hmm. this year, it eclipses that $200 million. So I would argue that there isn't a dime of new money. We are about hopefully we're going to just hold steady, and not be seeing critical services, clawed back.
Well,
but it's
so in your mind, it's holding steady. It's being fiscally prudent, and we get a lot of accolades for that. And in Jim's mind, he's just upset that we're not willing to raise taxes and spend more.
Well, and here's and Jim, technically speaking, the governor cannot in a budget propose revenue that doesn't exist in statute right now. So he can't say, I'd like to have $500 million more dollars invested in education because I'm hoping that there's a bill that's going to pass that's going to raise taxes. So now I'm going to show you how I would spend the hypothetical tax increase. He can't do that. He is constrained to the budget and the numbers that are arriving and what we have in terms of statutes and laws regarding those dollars now. So you can't
there's
be
no
as aspirational, and I'm using a good word for you. You can't be as aspirational greedy as you'd want to be. You can't because you got to work with the numbers you have.
The governor can include in his budget then an appendix that at least acknowledges some vision or some possibilities. I mean, the problem with Gary Herbert isn't that he isn't a great guy, the perfect guy to have as a neighbor. Kind of guy that is fun to talk to about sports. He just has zero vision of where to take the state. Can you imagine? You've got 80% of the legislature. You have won a re-election. You've got pretty good poll ratings. You can do things in the state, but the governor just is myopic. He just thinks it's enough to sit in the chair and not screw up. And the people of Utah ought to be saying, Governor, on Medicaid, on higher ed, on primary ed, on transportation, on air pollution, do something.
Right. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined on the left by, what is it, Jim DeBacchus, the senator and Democratic chairman, and Greg Hughes, our state representative and a member of Republican leadership in the House. We want to wish all of you a very happy Thanksgiving. Greg, in the interim since our last program, you mentioned with some fire in your email that you wanted to talk about the elimination of the use of the filibuster for presidential nominees in the U.S. Senate. This seemed to get you going there, man. What are you feeling?
I remember the days of George W. Bush, the greatest political pinata the Democrat Party has ever had, as far as I know or can remember. And the threats during the time when the Senate was controlled by the House or by the Republicans and we had George W. Bush in there, just the talk mm-hmm. of the nuclear option was an exposure of politics at its worst, heavy-handedness, a refusal to work across the aisle.
Reid on the record opposing it. Obama on the record
goodness.
Opposing
it. It was a great example of what a statesman should never, ever, ever even consider or let words leave their lips.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are. Now the rules change. Now you have a president who, to work across the aisle, has seen some delay or some challenges, and without even hesitating, Harry Reid goes nuclear option and in rule with a partisan, strictly partisan vote, eliminates the filibuster to again pursue exactly what they want to do on their side of the aisle. And there was a narrative in this country, and I would have loved to have believed that this was just a fair look, but it was that you just don't do things that way, that you got to come together. There are duly elected senators from both sides of the aisle. Come together, get this stuff done. And that requirement, that filibuster out there, required that kind of bipartisanship to some degree. The Democrats, not only have they done this, which they said was so bad, nobody's complaining. I don't see the narrative in the media saying that this is the worst thing that's ever happened.
People are upset with Washington. And just to be clear for our listening audience, what this does is makes it so a nominee doesn't have to clear the 60-vote threshold.
And
you have to be honest, Greg, there's just been this amazing, a stagnation, a lack of progress in government because nobody can get approved.
So the critical question is this. Is it because Harry Reid has not reached across and found that consensus? Or is it because they're just not allowed to do what they want to do and they were duly elected to do it? When it was Bush as president, it was you need to be a statesman and you need to reach across the aisle. When it is President Obama and Harry Reid, it's give us our way and get out of the way.
Duplicitous, Jim.
It's just not consistent. Pick one course, Jim, and then apply it to both parties.
Jim's being extremely patient here.
I just like a little dead air now and then. It's Thanksgiving. People are thinking about pie. They're
I'm thankful
about,
for that pregnant pause.
It sounds like this isn't your issue, Jim.
No, it is my issue. I'm appalled that Greg would characterize it that way. I mean, it takes two to compromise. And from the day this president arrived, they have said, we're not talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
We're not looking at your judges. We are not going to consider your judges. I mean, the average time for an Obama judge to be sitting there is 19 months. Even the Bush ones was less than six. And traditionally, we were down around 2.5 months. You can only talk to a tree so long before you realize that it's not talking
back. That's
because
Republicans worked with the Democrats in the Senate to come to an agreement to get those nominees moving. The Democrats don't want to play by that same game.
Why do we have 60 votes anyway? I mean, I say, no, really. I mean, I thought we lived in a country where it took a majority to get things done.
You wouldn't have had Obamacare absent that 60 vote.
You know what I find interesting about
threshold.
This, though, is so, we're talking about Washington, D.C., and we really on this program want to talk about Utah. Here we have divided government in Washington, D.C., and it's paralyzed. And in Utah, we don't really have divided government. We have a large supermajority that just goes and do things, and we end up being the best managed state.
Jim, listen. If you had this option,
Governor Herbert,
and it didn't require. Do you realize that if it had been a purely straight up vote on ACA, that you wouldn't have got it. You wouldn't have got it. You needed
if we got 60 votes. How could 50 not have got there?
Remember how they did it? They couldn't. So they went and said, well, this isn't a traditional bill. This is something that we can, what'd they call it? They had a term for it where they got their 51
fairness
to let it go through. And I'm telling you, you got to be careful what you'd like to do when your guy's in power, because there may be a day when he's not. And when you get to, when you talk out of both sides of your mouth, it just lose credibility.
When she's in power, I'm going to be fine, because when somebody gets elected, I say, give them the rope. Let them decide if they're going to hang themselves.
Make a mental note about this when the Republicans are
all
president.
All right. Well, typical, not a lot of agreement at the table.
Gentlemen,
Thanksgiving today. Lots to be grateful for. I don't know if you want to share a gripe or something you're thankful for, but Greg, you're on.
Let me just say, I do have gripes, but I will first say that I am truly grateful for my wonderful family. We're going to have a great Thanksgiving dinner today. We have football on the television. The Steelers are playing on Thanksgiving Day, which doesn't happen often, which I am particularly grateful for. What I am not grateful for is how Black Friday has somehow crept into our Thanksgiving hours. I mean, they had pushed it up to midnight just to, technically be on Friday. They have broken the barrier, and it's a sad commercialization,
Jim,
of a holiday.
Jim, something you're grateful for or a gripe?
I'm very grateful. Today is a big man TV dinner, not the usual Swanson, and you're always grateful for that. And the Stewart's, where we're going over for lunch. Animal control. That is an issue that this Salt Lake County needs to deal with. You lose a cat, you got to go around to nine jurisdictions. There's nine little empires. There's nine places. We need a single common Craigslist. You lose a pet, you go to one place. You find a pet, you go to one place. All these empires of animal control people need to be bulldozed.
Natalie, he doesn't know his cats are hiding from him. This isn't lost cats. They're on the lam.
I'll close by just expressing a lot of gratitude. You know, I'm an economist by training, and if you were to look where to live in this world right now, Europe's in recession, Asia's slowing down. I mean, you'd pick the United States of America. And if you were in the United States of America, I think you'd look to the Intermountain West as the fastest-growing region, the most vibrant region in the country. And very quickly, you would come to Utah. Rapidly growing labor force, low cost of doing business, lots of great things happening. And then once you're in Utah, you'd be in downtown Salt Lake City, a city on the rise. I think it's such a great time to be in this state. I'm very grateful for it. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We hope you enjoyed the conversation.